Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining us today. This is Kelly Barner, editor at Buyer's Meeting Point. Today, I would like to welcome Magnus Lind as my guest. Magnus is a finance and treasury expert chairing the International Network of Treasury Peer. He acts as moderator, speaker, advisor, board member, and investor in ventures participating in the transformation of the financial services market. He has a background as an international business executive in Europe, Southeast Asia, and North America, and has founded companies in seven different countries, where he acted as CEO, board director, investor, and entrepreneur. He is the editor of TreasuryPeer.com, among the most read blogs in the corporate finance arena, globally sharing corporate finance issues and taking the corporate perspective in financial matters in regular meetings with regulators, central banks, and the political world. Magnus, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
So, you've taken something of a raucous approach to finance and treasury, both topics that people are not usually so passionate and energetic about. Why don't you start us off by sharing your point of view on what sorts of change needs to be seen in these functions from where we are today?
Yeah, what you're talking about is where an area where I'm very active. It's called FinTech. It's short for financial technology. And that is, you see example of different payment solutions. PayPal, for instance, is a FinTech company. You have different new banks coming up. One very famous is Movin in the U.S. And you have peer-to-peer lending. And what is happening is, it's what we've been talking about for a very long time, is that FinTech, these new startups that are not so very small, many of them anymore, are disrupting the banks in the sense that they are unbundling them, but they are also providing much, much faster infrastructure. So a bank is two things. First of all, it's an infrastructure where you transport data, and data is in the form of money, and it also provides funding for the economy. That is what the bank is doing. But they have been very bad in providing infrastructure, or have been. So therefore, the startups using more modern technology and also methodologies is really changing how money flows in the economy and in companies. So if you disrupt the banks, and then that means that the corporation using banks to transfer money and transfer or borrow and investing and do trade finance, they are paying for imports, they're getting paid for exports. If that whole system is being disrupted, it also means that corporate finance will be disrupted. And it's kind of interesting, because if you see the physical supply chain where the CPOs have been working for or are working, that's extremely efficient, whilst the financial system, financial supply chain is extremely inefficient. I can give you one example, and it takes Toyota 17 to 18 hours to manufacture a custom-built car, and that is quite a complicated process, but it can take more than 24 hours to transfer the payment for it, which is basically a debit credit at the recipient and a debit credit at the sender. So if we look at the financial flow of money in the same way as we look at the physical flow of goods to manufacture anything, and try to be as efficient of transferring money or data, because money is only data in most cases, then we see how extremely inefficient the financial supply chain is. And if we go back to when this Toyota, this Lean Six Sigma and Kanban and everything of that was invented, we had a lot of resistance. One resistance was that we were not good at working cross-functional in the companies. We worked functionally. We had production, we had sales. For instance, the production manager could, in the beginning of the 70s, 80s, when there's someone talking Kanban and saying, maybe it's so hard to sell your goods, and then the production manager said, yes, but selling is not my responsibility, it's the sales department. I manufacture. And now that has changed, so we see the supply chain as a cross-functional flow of goods. And we are exactly at that point in time for the financial chain where we see that we have very functionally divided. So treasury, for instance, borrow money, invest money. It's the IT department that puts out the point of sales, you know, the card readers. So they do the payment collections. It's the AP that is paying the suppliers. And there's no real connection, there's no real methodology in the financial chain of putting that together in the process like in the physical chain. And this, I think, is very fascinating. Maybe some people think I'm crazy, but it's fascinating because we have a blueprint how to change the supply chain. And now we just need to use that blueprint and adapt it. And one conclusion we had probably the first, I don't know of any others. We ran Treasury Peer a conference 2 weeks ago in Copenhagen called the Talent Show, where we invited different functions, CPOs, treasurers, CFOs, and some vendors, and starting to talk about this. And we clearly see that there is no real understanding of how we can use, for instance, Lean Six Sigma. I think we are mostly now the first product that has come up to solve the problem, and that is the problem that the big companies take the goods and then wait 90 days to pay for it. So, which is a bit of a crazy thing, and the suppliers get a problem, of course, with their cash flow. So then we are implementing something called supply chain finance, or supply finance, which basically means that the big buyer helps the small supplier to borrow money and use the invoice or payable as a collateral to get better returns. So the weird thing is that the financial supply chain focuses more on the supplier than on the customer. And that we discussed on the talent show, because if we're going to invest and really be successful with rationalization and doing a very good supply chain, we have to, like in Lean Six Sigma, focus on the customer, and we have not come so far yet.
And one of the things, I think the supply chain finance topic is one that is starting to come up in a greater number of companies. And, you know, you talked a little bit about the cross-functional structure or understanding that needs to be in place for some of this to be successful. So given the fact that the majority of the buyer's meeting point audience is in procurement, or certainly working with finance all the time, what sorts of either understanding does procurement need to build up within their own talent pool, and what sorts of conversations do they need to be having with internal finance if they're trying to get one of these successful supply chain finance approaches off the ground?
First of all, they need to start to talk together. They need to map it also. And there are very good solutions out there to do supply chain finance or supply chain finance. I think one of the obvious obstacles when you try to do something cross-functional is that each function has different KPIs. And that, I think, is a big problem in general for big companies. They have so complex KPIs, so no one understands what they really are trying to drive at. We have one KPI or one metrics, which is called working capital, and that is you don't want to have debt to financiers, to banks, but you love to have debt to the suppliers, because that decreases your working capital, and the management gets paid by earnings over working capital. So the less working capital, the better. And this is what drives most finance departments, and then obviously what drives procurement is many times price, if you put it to make a point. And we need to align. I think we have a third component coming in more and more, and that is corporate social responsibility. I mean, if you look at from a corporate social responsibility, and if you're a big, strong company, it's just funny because I run roundtables with treasurers for big companies, and when we invoice every year the annual membership fee, it can take 90, 120 days for us to get paid. And that is a result of a working capital project this big company has had, and that is push payment terms. And then I sit with these treasurers in round tables, and they complain, where should we put all our money? We have so much money, cash on our hands, and there are negative interest rates. And I usually tell them, pay your suppliers early instead, and they say, we can't because we have a working capital metrics. I think that is probably the issue that has the metrics that created this a bit crazy situation. But now more and more corporate social responsibility comes into play here. We have supplier pay by Obama in the US. We have similar initiatives in the UK, prompt payment agenda in Netherlands called Betaal Me Nu, which basically is Dutch for pay me now. And corporate social responsibility is being a good corporate citizen. And obviously, if I come as a supplier and provide you something you put in your car, and you can put it in the car within 5 minutes, but you wait 120 days to pay me, that is not really ethical, to be honest. So I think that we are coming to a situation where these long payment terms will in some way disappear, probably by external financing, which will be the banking system. And then we need rails to manage that, and that could be companies like SAP Ariba, Atolia, or those kind of people. But what you need to, I think it's not only procurement and treasury and finance, you should involve supply chain, you should involve IT also, and sit down and get a strategy for this. Because if you don't do that, it's very hard to implement supply finance. Usually you manage maybe 20% of the spend or 20% of the suppliers, and only the simple suppliers are on board. You don't get the long tail of the suppliers who are really those in need of financing. And then there are different kind of models. One is that it's buyer-centric, which means that for every supplier, you have to go into a different portal each time to register and to borrow money and so forth. Then there are other models where you as a supplier come in and the buyers connect to them. So you have big pools of suppliers, and that is taking down the burden for the suppliers. Because as most things in the beginning, we lack standards, and if we have standards, we lack harmonization. So there's a lot of things going on from that in that area. But if you want to work, if supply chain finance is supplier centric. So if you want to start from somewhere and coming into the financial supply chain, you can start there. But if you want to really make sense and be a value-added part of the organization, you have to start with the customer. And if you see in financial supply chain, it struck me just 6 months ago, there's an airport in London called Gatwick. And I went into Gatwick Airport. I went through the X-ray and all the security. And then I came in like into a funnel. I couldn't escape it. I got into the tax-free shop, you know. And everywhere there was chocolate, there was alcohol, there was perfume, toys, whatever. And it was so organized. And I could buy all this stuff very simple, very fast. And it came from all over the world with very complicated physical supply chain. And then I was there to be able, and then I came to the cashier machine to pay. And it was a long queue. It took very long time. So I just had to drop the bag and say, sorry, I don't have time to eat and I will miss my plane. So I didn't do the call. So the friction to pay is much bigger than the friction to buy. And here, I think that the treasurers has failed not to take that responsibility. But if you start with rationalization of the financial supply chain from that side, it will be much easier to cooperate on the supplier side, I believe, because then you derive it from something tangible. Because we need suppliers of payment terminals that are much more agile and much more faster than they are today. For instance, and then it's easier because you see a tangible benefit for the customer. It's easy to cooperate internally. Maybe it's, therefore I take that example because we should not be stuck in supplier finance, and that is a risk for CPOs to be stuck with suppliers. You need to focus on the customer, and that leads and understanding the whole context. We had the CPO at H&M. The retail, the clothing company from Sweden. He was speaking at the talent show, and he said, if I'm going to succeed as CPO, I need to understand the context, and the context has to start from the customer, not from the supplier.
And yet even if we manage to successfully pull together all of the internal functions and get them aligned, and then pull in the supplier, and then pull in the customer, we're still leaving one major party out of the conversation, and that is the banks. The banks will obviously play a critical role in this, and I'm sure it's something that finance and treasury have given a lot more thought to than procurement has, because we're that much more removed from dealing with them directly. But if we're going to get more involved, what should those of us with an opportunity to create or start building a supply chain finance program need to understand about global banking and what part your banking partners end up playing in the feasibility of this kind of a program?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, because the banks are in sort of a limbo, and it's different in Europe than in the U.S. In the U.S., corporations are closer in a more business development sense with the banks than they are in Europe. It's arm length relationship more in Europe, and that is a consequence of the regulation. First of all, we should know that the purpose of the financial regulation is to disintermediate corporates and banks, because banks should primarily secure tax revenues. And we have to understand that most of the regulation we have, which is Basel regulation, comes from Europe, and Europe is more anti-corporate than the US. So we will more and more see that the large banks will have the primary tier one customers are the governments. So they ensure that households can borrow so they can afford paying taxes and consume, and also that the governments can borrow. So in the U.S., you still have banks that are very close to corporations, at least the large corporations. We have that also in Europe, but the fact is that small SMEs, almost all SMEs, can't borrow money in the bank any longer. So they are, in fact, unbanked. They have bank accounts, but they can't borrow. So they are, in fact, unbanked. And this means that someone has to step in. As long as payment doesn't happen immediately on delivery, someone has to finance that. And that would probably be the bank. But I see more and more that the fintech, the new financial technology, will provide the new rails for the banks. So the fintech will be more, a typical example is Ariba or Busware or Tolia or GC Nexus will be the system we work in, and they draw from different finances with many, many times other banks. So we are in a crucial period here when banks will get new roles, but they will not disappear. Don't expect the bank system to disappear. They are holding the whole society on its hands. So, but they will have a different role to corporations, and they will not be able to provide two things: the best technology. Technology companies will do that. That's fintech. And banks are also regionalized, and this is a huge problem for many, especially large corporations who want to have global processes and sell their merchandise all over the world in the same way. Be able to, so if one market dies, they can push it to another market. They don't see borders. Banks do, because of regulation and because of other reasons. So I think that fintech will be a layer that could be a global layer that connects different regional banks underneath. You see that already in all the new payment system. PayPal is a typical example. When you use PayPal, it's extremely expensive, but a very, very good system. That beneath that system is banks, or the banks' payment systems. We don't see the payment systems. But what we can get paid immediately. I can email you money immediately on PayPal, but the money doesn't come into your PayPal account from my PayPal account. But then underneath, PayPal has managed to have contacts with banks, and then there are debt and credits. So in the banking system, the money doesn't transport so quickly, and this means that PayPal, I think, is a typical example of how we will see how we will work with banks. Fintech on top, the rates on top, then the whole financing in beneath would be banks and maybe other finances also. So that is how I see it will build up. So if I were a CPO, I would work very much understanding the opportunities with fintech, because my experience is Treasury doesn't. So, but Treasury knows exactly what is happening with the banks. So you have the bank relationship and bank knowledge internally in the company. What you don't have is the fintech company. And there, I think, is an opportunity for the CPOs to come into this by being more knowledgeable about fintech than Treasury is, because Treasury is not involved in fintech. I talked to a CPO at the company that he said he's a technical geek. So his vision and passion of his life was trying to run his shop from an iPad. And he said he managed to do that. The only thing he couldn't get into the iPad was the actual collection or payment from the customer. And then he found a solution how to do that. And he was really surprised that the treasurer hasn't been taking that space, because taking away friction in the payment, like I told you about the Gatwick Airport, will make anyone a hero with top management very quickly. So I think there is an area where the CPO can get into the financial supply chain very, very quickly. Get to understand fintech more in detail, and it's finance is simple. It's just regulation and bankers making it difficult. It's really simple. It's just transportation of data. So
And I think to that point, and to increasing the conversation about all of this within procurement, you've obviously put together a great resource at Treasury Peer through the information that's on the site, as well as through the events that you host. So for anyone that's interested in learning more about Magnus, Treasury Peer, and Supply Chain Finance, I will put links to some relevant content on today's Blog Talk Radio episode page. Magnus, thank you so much for sharing your time and perspective today.
My pleasure.
And thank you as well to everyone who has joined us to listen to this BNP Radio podcast. Please feel free to share your comments and feedback on this conversation, as well as to share it with anyone from your network that you feel would benefit from the information.